Palm Springs, a place where time stands still and Patrick O'Hara can hide from the world. Once the beloved star of the people upstairs, Patrick now lives as a recluse in his mid-century modern sanctuary, purchased with TV money and maintained with meticulous precision. His housekeeper Rosa gently suggests he should meet someone. His neighbors, a gay thruple nicknamed Jed, tease him about his isolation. But Patrick feels he's simply done with life after losing his partner Joe in a tragic accident years ago. Then comes the call that changes everything. His brother Greg needs Patrick to care for his children, Maisie and Grant, while he enters rehab. The children are still reeling from their mother Sarah's recent death, the same Sarah who was Patrick's best friend before she married his brother. "I can't do this," Patrick protests, panic rising. But when his sister Clara implies the children need a mother figure, Patrick's competitive nature flares. Before he knows it, he's boarding a plane with two grieving children, his carefully constructed isolation about to crumble in ways he never imagined. "My toilet is haunted!" Grant's terrified scream pierces Patrick's first night. The culprit? Patrick's Japanese washlet with automatic features. Chaos erupts when Patrick accidentally sprays water in Grant's face while demonstrating the bidet. Unexpected laughter fills the bathroom, perhaps their first genuine moment of joy in months. Morning brings new challenges. Grant claims the tooth fairy left Patrick's golden globe under his pillow. Maisie refuses to swim because she hates girls' bathing suits. Patrick's pancakes look nothing like their mother's Mickey Mouse shapes. Each moment forces Patrick to improvise, creating Gunkle rules on the fly. Gunkle rule number 7. In this house, we wear what we want. It doesn't matter if it's for boys or girls, he declares, showing Maisie his caftan collection. Gunkle rule number 8. Live your life to the fullest every day, because every day is a gift, immediately realizing he's broken this rule himself. The children's presence gradually pulls Patrick back into the world through outings and adopting a rescue dog named Marlene Dietrich. When an earthquake sends Patrick rushing to check on the children, finding Grant injured propels him to the emergency room despite years of hospital avoidance after Joe's death. At his nephew's bedside, Patrick weeps as memories of Joe flood back. Hidden in Patrick's bedside table is a suicide letter with enough pills to end things if they ever got that bad. The letter reveals how Joe's family excluded him from Joe's final moments, never acknowledging their relationship. Only a nurse named Seth eventually allowed Patrick to say goodbye. "Part of me left my body when I held his hand for the last time," Patrick wrote. "I'm like an untethered astronaut without him." When Patrick tries to return the children early to Greg at rehab, Greg confronts him. "You float through life determined not to get attached to anyone." Greg admits choosing Patrick as caretaker, not just for the children, but for Patrick himself. "Go home," Greg urges. "Show them your grief. Help them navigate theirs." When Grant asks Patrick if he believes in heaven, Patrick answers honestly that Sarah is not in pain anymore and at peace. During hot tub conversations, Patrick shares stories about his life with Sarah in New York, their tiny Chelsea apartment where he slept on the couch. Despite their poverty, he considers it possibly his happiest time. When asked about Sarah's happiest moments, he explains they were being pregnant with Maisie, her wedding day, and Grant's birth. Patrick also tells the children about Joe, his boyfriend who died before they were born. When Maisie asks when grief gets easier, Patrick answers, "Any day now," showing them grief isn't the end. He compares memories to stars that can never be erased. During a rainstorm, Patrick surprises them with a birthday cake for Sarah. They make wishes and celebrate by dancing to "Let's Go" in the kitchen, becoming the music itself, their sadness ringing through their fingertips as radiant sunshine. Clara arrives unexpectedly from New York, horrified by the Christmas decorations in July and what she calls manufactured happiness. The siblings' parenting philosophies immediately clash, Clara's structured approach versus Patrick's unconventional methods. Their rivalry escalates when Clara announces she's taking the children back to Connecticut, claiming Patrick is exploiting them for social media. Patrick discovers she had purchased return tickets before arriving, revealing her premeditated plan. The conflict worsens when Patrick receives court documents showing Clara filed for emergency guardianship, portraying his home as an unsuitable party house with no discipline. After confronting her, Patrick learns the truth. Clara's husband is having affairs, and they're divorcing. Her attempt to take the children stems from her own pain. Patrick threatens legal action, but offers understanding. Clara withdraws her petition, yet leaves alone, acknowledging she needs to work through her issues first. This custody battle forces Patrick to recognize how deeply he's come to care for Maisie and Grant.
"I don't like you, but I need you," Patrick tells his agent Neil. After learning he must support his niece and nephew through college, Patrick decides to revive his career. When Neil questions his commitment, Patrick fires him and signs with Neil's assistant, Cassie, instead. At a party with a 7-foot pink tinsel Christmas tree, Patrick meets Emery, a handsome young actor and potential love interest. They share a cigarette by the pool, discussing happiness under the stars. When Patrick asks if Emery is truly happy, his name means happy in Hebrew, Emery confirms he's pretty fucking happy. Patrick finds himself drawn to this youthful confidence. As Greg's rehab release approaches, Patrick faces separation from the children who've transformed his life. During a meteor shower, Maisie asks what he'll do after they leave. Grant sweetly says any gifts left would be mine, for when we come visit you, making Patrick's heart swell 3 sizes. At the airport, Greg makes a final plea for Patrick to join them in Connecticut. Patrick, having adopted Sarah's mothering role, admits he'll miss the children, suddenly dreading his empty house. Back home, Patrick finds his replacement Golden Globe, but considers keeping the damaged one for Grant. He takes down the pink Christmas tree while playing Hard Candy Christmas on repeat, the song's plaintive hope matching his mood. Patrick's transformation leads him to impress TV executives with stories about his nibblings when pitched Gunkle Knows Best. He negotiates to postpone his pilot, arranging his schedule at Westport County Playhouse to be available after school. The novel ends with Patrick backstage, watching his family in the audience, Greg, Maisie, Grant, Emery, and Clara. Briefly, he sees Joe's and Sarah's faces smiling down. As stage lights warm his face, Patrick realizes he's exactly where he belongs. What began as an unwanted intrusion, 2 grieving children in his controlled world, became the gift that saved Patrick from self-imposed exile. Sometimes unexpected disruptions become our greatest blessings.